On June 14, 2012, Lorenzo Johnson, whose wrongful conviction was finally overturned by a federal court, turned himself in to go back to prison, again serving out a sentence of life without parole for a murder in 1995 that he insists he did not commit. In this third installment of the investigation into his case, we spoke with Lorenzo Johnson this past Sunday about some of the details of the legal papers his lawyers filed this past Friday in their latest effort to undo that Supreme Court decision reinstating his conviction and seeking a new trial. So there are 4 points, and I want to go through these things here to make sure that I understand what's being said. The first point has to do with Carla Brown, the witness, and that she had made a written statement prior to giving testimony at the trial, and the written statement disagrees with what she said in the written statement to the detectives, disagrees on the basic facts from what she testified to at trial. And there's a dispute. The other side says, yeah, we gave it to you. So the lawyers that handled the trial said first they don't remember seeing it. It's not in their file. They had written to you asking for copies of all statements. And
no, I wrote to them asking for a copy.
Oh, right. And they said that she did not make a written statement before trial, right?
Exactly.
Okay, and that it wasn't used in the trial. But they also say there's this objective proof that Brown's statement was never marked or identified on the trial record, and that during the whole career of this public defender's lawyer, they always submit the written statements because they use it when they interrogate the witness on the stand, saying, okay, here's Exhibit A, didn't you tell us
this
blah, blah, blah.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Didn't you tell us blah, blah, blah. Do I have that right?
That's accurate.
Okay, so that's the first point. Now, then we have Victoria Dubes, is that how you say it?
Dubes,
okay. But she was a witness. What did she testify to?
She was originally one of my alibi witnesses that was with me in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess she started hanging with another crowd of people and got locked up. And once she got locked up, they used her as a motive witness to go against me.
Gotcha. And then it turns out that the assigned detective, Kevin Duffin, had a close family-like relationship with her, which
was
also...
her brother. They lived in the same house.
They were what? It's her what?
At one time, they lived in the same house. That was her godbrother. So, you know, we never knew this close family tie. So now, you know, it makes sense. Why did she change her original statement?
Right. She had somebody that could help her make a deal to get out of the trouble she was in.
She got a deal 7 days after my trial.
Wow. All right, then there's a statement from the former detective Dillard. What was Dillard's role in the trial?
See, what happened was...
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Detective Dillard, he was one of the detectives that was investigating the case.
Mm-hmm.
And our whole thing was we knew that Carla Brand was at that police station that night. And they always said that she wasn't at the police station that night and that she made a statement later on. But she slipped up at the preliminary hearing and said that when she first talked to the police, she lied to them. She told them flimflams that she wasn't there. So we was wondering, where's that record when you first talked to them? And now, 19 years later, we found out from Detective Dillard that she was not only in the police station that night, but they worked on her for 4 months for her to tell the truth. So our whole thing is, where are the reports that she was telling you for the 4 months she was working on her?
Right. Because apparently they didn't agree with the testimony
exactly.
that she gave. And,
exactly.
And so they had 4 months basically of helping her get her story together.
Exactly.
Okay. And then finally, so those are the points basically that support the 4 points in the affidavit. All right. So you submitted the papers on Friday. What are we doing next?
Right now, we're waiting for the judge to make a hearing date for everything. Because, you know, in the Commonwealth, the Attorney General, they kept saying that, you know, they had an open file policy that, you know, and they tried to quote off the records, you know, but what happened was they never turned this material over to us or the lawyers. So for all these years, you know, they was using the record fighting me about this, and now here it is, the lawyers themselves that filed for the discovery wrote affidavits and showed that they've been trying to get that discovery and that they was not turning over. They were unsuccessful. So it shows back then that it was a malicious prosecution.
Oh, and also, one of the other items here is there was, in fact, a cover letter from the DA's office to your trial lawyer listing all these items that were being transmitted, and these documents, the missing 9 pages... were not, and the earlier statements from this witness were not included in the transmittal.
Carla Brown's statement was never in anything part of the record. You know, it wasn't introduced as evidence in the court at trial. When the Attorney General sent, you know, the cover letter for all the witnesses' statements, the discovery he was sending, her statement and her name was not listed on it either.
Let me remind people of why you were in prison. There was a murder. You were accused of being present and an accomplice and convicted of that, and that was based on what?
That was based on Carla Brown saying that I was present before the murder took place, that I was standing there.
And in the statements...
Sidewalk, like if I could be a lookout.
And in the statements that were not submitted to you until very recently, but that were not part of the trial, there were written statements of her testimony
totally
to the police.
Totally opposite of what she said at trial, and the prosecutor sat there from my early stages for 19 years, let this false testimony go by without stepping in saying that this testimony is wrong, that she's saying this is not the testimony from the affidavit she had gave us. This took one off my preliminary hearing to my trial, my direct appeal, my post-conviction relief appeal. It went on to my federal appeal all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. Use her testimony at trial to bring me back to prison after my conviction was vacated. They used this false testimony. Not once has the prosecutor in good faith said, no, this ain't right. This was said that this, what you're making a part of the record is not accurate. So basically, it was a fraud all along.
And then you didn't get it until after you were reincarcerated after the Supreme Court?
I didn't get it until a couple months ago.
Wow.
And this is the throne on the 20th year now.
So that's the person that places you there. The person that gives
that's
you...
That's the only witness to this case.
Right. And then there was a witness as to motive who said she was with you in a bar
exactly.
or something. And that person had originally said you were in New York.
Exactly.
Wow. That's the whole case against you. And you're still in prison. If you're
still in prison. My appeal is in front of my trial judge. And, you know... Hopefully, you know, what's right take place and they're right that's wrong, you know. But at the very minimum, it should be a couple hearings, you know, for what's going on right now.
And then your lawyers say in the pleadings that this case here is over the procedural, wrongdoing and that there should be a new trial on that basis. And, of course, now the only case that they have would be impeached there. But your lawyer also says... that they have evidence that you're innocent, which they're not presenting now because it's not necessary. What is that evidence, or can you talk about that yet?
See, because what happened is this detective, Kevin Duffin, he threatened a lot of witnesses not to come forth for me. Like, my girlfriend at the time that I was staying with out here knew I was in New York, and I had called from New York when I was in New York around this time frame, and he went to see her, and he kept threatening her not to come forth. She said, check my phone records to show that he was in New York when he called me. He wasn't here. Like, we was living together. He threatened to take her kids and give her false charges not to come forth. And that she's not the only one. You know, we had a couple of witnesses that was on the trial stand that said that he was trying to do the same to them.
So now those people are not within the reach of the police because the children are grown or whatever they had
exactly.
hanging over them.
So now
they can
all
testify.
The time later, they feel to come forth, but at the same time, in 2013, the Attorney General's office who prosecuted the case said they was going to investigate my innocent claims and my corruption claims. And for 2 years, they act like they was doing that, and in reality, they wasn't doing that. So when it was time for them to file their reply, they didn't stand on the evidence. What they did was they ran behind procedural default and the timeliness that, you know, has expired for me to file my appeal. So if you're looking for somebody's innocence, why would you do that?
Right. Yeah, they were hanging the earlier case on. They were saying you were time barred from bringing these claims now, and
exactly.
All of this.
They blamed me. Literally, they blamed me for them hiding evidence for 19 years.
Wow.
They blamed that I didn't find the evidence sooner, and they blamed me for this. Like,
wow.
They did something like.
Okay, and suppose you're unsuccessful with this appeal. What happens next?
We go to the next stage as far as the Superior Court.
And if this entire line of inquiry is shut down at
one thing for sure, in Pennsylvania, life is life. It's not like other states. Like, it's natural life in Pennsylvania. And you know, if you don't have no new evidence to bring you in, like, you know, to show your innocence, it's like the procedures here is so strict. Like, you know, unlike say New York, where there's no time limit for newly discovered evidence, so if you can show your innocence. Pennsylvania will give you 60 days to file that evidence. If you don't file it within 60 days, they'll argue, you know, time bar and stuff like that you can't file your appeal. So it ain't about being innocent no more. It's about if you can file before the timeline. And this is what they did. This is what they're trying to do with me. But we have shown now that, you know, it's not possible.
So how old were you when you went in?
22.
And how old are you now?
41.
Wow. Okay, is there anything else you want to put into this week's edition?
Oh, you could, you know, go check freelorenzojohnson.org for updates on the case situation. And, you know, speak about my injustice. You know, I invite everybody to write about, you know, my injustice, check into it, and, you know, and be vocal about it. You know, I'm one of many, like I always say.
Mm. Yeah, where you are now, do you know other people that have gotten the same kind of deal from the criminal justice system?
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, one of our friends of mine, he got exonerated last year, Eugene Gilliard. He was here with me. And there's a couple of people here right now that's on the verge of hopefully getting exonerated, but they're getting fought tooth and nail by prosecution also. And what's strange to me is that, you know, I just read in Reuters last month, those record numbers of exonerations last year is 125, and they said it was largely in part due to prosecutors owning up to their mistakes in their offices, right? And I say, you know, that's a half-truth, because I'm living the fact that they fight me tooth and nail, and they know I'm innocent from day one.
Mm.
You know?
How long was Eugene in for?
Eugene was in for 15 years.
Wow. Okay, we'll be speaking with you again next week.
Okay.
We will continue to discuss this case in depth over the next few weeks with Lorenzo Johnson from the Frackville, Pennsylvania prison where he is currently held. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.